Hi, this is Paul, and I have a friend with me on the line today. His name is Reverend Lloyd Wickers. I suppose now he has a military title, too. He's been a friend of mine for a number of years. He was a colleague of mine. He pastored the Amon Valley Christian Reformed Church just about an hour south of me in Ripon, so we worked together on a variety of church things over the years. Over the last few years, he's been a U.S. Navy chaplain. And he is currently stationed in Rome. And when I bumped into him in Facebook talking about all of this coronavirus stuff, and so I thought it would be really cool to talk to him. So, Lloyd, it's so much fun to talk to you, even if it's under these less than totally happy circumstances. It's good to see you.
Hey, it's good to see you, too. And a little correction. I'm not actually in Rome. I'm in Sicily. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you, just so people get a chance to know you a little bit, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe especially the chaplaincy stuff, how that's been going and what are you doing?
Oh, just in general, outside of a crisis, I mean.
Outside
right?
of a crisis, yeah, because it's helpful for people to know you.
Yeah, so indeed, I joined the Navy as a chaplain in 2014. And I've served in a couple of places. I've been at Navy chaplain, served the Navy, the Marine Corps, and the Coast Guard. So I actually joined, and they sent me straight to the Marine Corps. Spent some time at Camp Pendleton in Southern California, deployed with an infantry battalion there in 2016. And a couple years, almost 3 years ago, made our move here to Naval Air Station Sigonella in Sicily, Italy, the hub of the Med. Is our kind of little tag name, I guess, if you will. Been here for about 2.5 years, and a lot of, honestly, in terms of what we do, Paul, a lot of what we do as chaplains, on the religious side of the house, we provide religious needs and the exercise, free exercise of religious practice for people out of our own faith tradition. So in that regard, I'm a Christian Reformed minister that gets to, you know, wear a different uniform every day, I guess. The facilitate piece, you know, religious freedom is extended to everybody in the armed services, and everybody doesn't have their own chaplain, though. So we facilitate for people of all faiths. We spend a lot of time counseling. We're not therapists, but we do a lot of pastoral counseling and that kind of thing, which in the military, I think, is unique in that chaplains are the only people that have the privilege of absolute confidentiality. So we report nothing to anyone, and there are no exceptions.
Wow.
To the extent that civilian pastors, I think, would even have a hard time with the things that we're not allowed to report. So
yeah,
it is different here. And we spend a lot of time advising leaders on things related to religious freedom and religious practice, advising leaders on matters of morale and ethics and ethical leadership. Yeah, we have the freedom to walk around just about anywhere we want. And for the most part, I would say our presence is welcome in just about every place we walk into.
Wow. Oh, that sounds wonderful. Is your family there with you, or are they back in the States?
So on this duty station, they're here. Yeah, okay. This is considered shore duty for me. It's a 3-year tour that's supposed to end in July. We'll see. we'll see in light of the crisis if anything changes in that. But so far, we're slated to move to Japan in July.
Okay. Have you enjoyed this? It sounds like you have.
It's been a blast.
Oh.
Absolutely. I mean, it. Pastoring in churches, I got a lot of great years of experience. I learned a lot there. Great memories. Some hard ones too, but for the most part, a great experience. This has been, in many ways, a chance to really take theology and apply it in ways that go so far beyond the scope of anything I thought about as a parish pastor. We meet
Wow.
people from so many different backgrounds. And
Wow.
It is practical theology every day.
Wow. Wow. Well, it sounds tremendous. And I'm so glad that you, I mean, it's a big leap to take from a local parish pastor to a Navy chaplain. But, you know, I remember when you took that leap, and so I'm glad it's really worked out.
Yeah, no, it's been fun. I'm the old guy just about everywhere I've worked. That was not true when I was pastoring. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I'm not even the old guy at my church. I'm the young guy.
No, this is a new variety of youth ministry, Paul. it's pretty amazing. So.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about what we're going to talk about, which is this coronavirus. Now, here in Sacramento County, just yesterday we got the shelter in place order, and so Sacramento and Yolo counties are shelter in place counties right now, along with some in the Bay Area. The governor of California has advised people, basically given sort of a, I don't know to the degree to which it's a legal order, but the whole California supposedly now is shelter in place. I was just chatting with some family in Rhode Island and Massachusetts, and they don't have the legal side of it, but people, stores are closing. And I get emails and comments from a number of people saying, this is a huge overreaction to something that is a small thing. And just being local, whereas a church right down the road has had a death, and now a number of people have tested positive. Testing is way behind here in the United States. Nobody's been sick in my church. I only personally know a few people who are sick, sort of. I talked to one guy in England yesterday who is, but I mean, it's so for a lot of people right now in the States, it's sort of hard to get orientation. You see the alarm of the government, you hear things in the news. We know that the media in many ways, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. And so they play this game of just hyping everything. What do things look like from your end of the world?
Well, let me say first, shelter in place is an interesting name to give it. When that's called shelter in place here, we're diving for cover because it means bullets are flying. Or there's an active shooter somewhere. Around here, it's a mandatory quarantine. So what do I see, right? Well, to be perfectly honest, 3 weeks ago, Paul, I probably would have been among the chorus that said, this is a bad flu, and there's a lot of hype and we need to relax a little bit. Within 2 weeks, we had three cases. We went from three cases in Italy to 17,000 cases in Italy. That was about 2 weeks' time that have passed. Any minute now, I'm expecting the update. We're kind of hovering around here for these latest updates in terms of new cases and new deaths. And just even as I glance now, it's not come through quite yet. But the rate at which this virus has spread is incredible. And I watch from a distance at some of the things that you guys are seeing in the States on the news. We do get some news networks that come out here, mostly the cable news stuff, which seems, you used the word sensationalized. I almost want to call it entertainment. It's hard to watch. Yes. And honestly, even some of what I see in terms of how Americans are responding to this is a bit hard to watch, in part because we're about 3 weeks ahead of you. We've been under this quarantine for quite some time already. And just last night, the Italian government put the screws in just a little bit tighter, and if there's still room to go tighter, but here we are. So what do you do with 3,500 new cases a day, and anywhere from 350 to 500 new deaths in a day? When I look at some of the numbers, and I'm no mathematician, but when you look at the United States and when things were first discovered, and Italy, when things were first discovered, and you just put about 2 weeks in between the two, the trajectory should cause you all to pause just a little bit and take this a bit more seriously. I'm not a medical person. I can't speak to how is this virus different than others. What I can tell you is that it has. We can't drive in this country without having authorization to be on the road right now.
Really? And that's not just because you're U.S. military or something like that?
No. There's a documentation from the Italian government that if we're going through a checkpoint, we have to provide, which basically says we're on the road to get groceries, or we're on the road to go to the hospital, or to get medication, or for some other life necessity. To not be out for the right one of those reasons results, I want to say, in a 200 or 200 euro, 250 euro fine.
Wow.
To lie on that document is a much larger fine and prison. So wow. they're taking it very, very seriously. Now, this has been a problem that's probably been far more significant in northern Italy, and I imagine the news on your side of the pond is capturing that too. However, it's not slowed yet, and it's moving south. And so I think there's greater fear here. We see not quite to the degree that you saw in the States, the people, you know, flooding to stores and stocking up on things. Toilet paper, of all things. Can you help me out with that one, Paul?
Well,
everything I've read says nothing about diarrhea with this. So, I mean,
well, there's a friend of mine named Jonathan Peugeot, who's an Orthodox icon carver. He just made a video about that, and it was a good video in terms of why symbolically, and others have commented psychologically. You know, it's a fear response. People, well, I'm gonna need this, so
yeah, go figure. And maybe it's not an issue here because in Europe they use bidets, right? I mean, what's the purpose of toilet paper? Only the Americans go after that stuff. So, you know, the trends we see, at least at this point, it does impact. I mean, the death rates are typically the older people, and I've heard lots of theories as to why that is, and even some of the, I would say, careless and irresponsible stuff I've seen on social media. You know, well, you know, Italians smoke. Well, yeah, so do Americans, right? or, you know, those who are sick. I think one of the things that's really been hard to watch here, Paul, is that we have good doctors here. I would say a good number of doctors in Italy have even been trained in the States. If you want to say that that's the gold standard, I don't know that I go that far, but if that's your metric, okay. There's even a good number of doctors that have been trained in the United States. It's not for lack of skill. Yeah. We just don't have the equipment, yeah. And we don't have the bed space. Yeah. And so with such an incredibly contagious virus that we don't know that much about yet, that seems to be targeting older people and hitting them largely with respiratory problems, you go to the hospital and in a city like Catania, which is the big city closest to here, you know, you've got some 315,000 people. You've got 20 ventilators in this entire city. Wow. And this city, they're the big hospitals for a lot of feeder towns that are surrounding it too, right? So now you've got doctors that are having to make wartime battlefield medical decisions. 30 patients in the room, you got 3 ventilators in that hospital. Who gets it?
Wow.
Right? So they're having to decide, you know, who's young enough to survive this?
Yeah.
But it's not just an age thing, because a young person with a deep medical history might get passed over for somebody that's got a fighting chance at getting over this.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of what I see and hear, and I appreciate the way you asked the question, Paul, you look around and you say, well, we don't see it here. It's not affecting a lot of people around here. Here's the thing that I'm seeing in Italy is these people go home and they're younger and they're going into very, let's say, multi-generational homes, right? So you can be contagious for 14 days and be asymptomatic. And so you walk around this place and you don't pay attention to quarantines and you go home and you bring it home. And the next thing you know, grandma or grandpa gets it, or nonno and nonna here in Italy, right? So a lot of the answer to why do we do what we do, why is quarantine important, it's not just so that you stay healthy. It's so that the people around you stay healthy, right? People don't worry about this so much when it doesn't affect them personally, but wait till it's your grandma or grandpa who gets turned away from the hospital and told to go home because they don't have room, right? We see ICUs in hallways in hospitals. In northern Italy, there are lines of military vehicles outside of hospitals waiting to pick up bodies.
Wow.
I mean, it is something to pay attention to. Unfortunately, it seems like, and I would, you know, I'm not going to speak for the Italian government because I can't, but it seems like if I'm any indication of what a lot of other people are like and how they approach this, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal until it's a big deal. And then really the momentum has started. The trajectory is ugly. And how do you stop it?
Yeah.
So it's heart-wrenching.
How are people doing emotionally with it? And maybe first, you know, to the degree that you have contact or experience with civilians around, and then we can talk about the soldiers that you're actually caring for.
Yeah. So I think around the community, yeah, there's fear. And I think there's, Italy is a very social country. And so when you talk about quarantine, it's very difficult for them to do. And you have those that are just kind of disregarding these instructions and continuing to go about their business. At least that's been the case for a couple of weeks. I think that's changing now with some tighter screws going in. But then you also have those that are just, why aren't these people listening? Why aren't you doing what you're supposed to be doing? Why are you endangering your neighbors? Why are you endangering my family? I don't see them fleeing to grocery stores. I largely see in this community, because they are so much of a social community, it seems like there's a care for one another. So that going to grocery stores and just taking every last thing and leaving nothing for those that come behind. Americans do that, but some Americans do that. But I don't see as much of that around here. They're only letting people in a few at a time in a grocery store because of the social distancing piece.
Yeah,
I haven't gone shopping in town because I haven't needed to, and we've been told you shop the closest place to your home. So that for me, that happens to be on base, and the rules are a little bit different here. But those that I know that live out in town, yeah, it's tough. There were lines out the door, but people waited their turn. They got what they needed. It doesn't seem like, for the most part, things are not on the shelves because trucks are still driving and shipments are still coming in. They haven't stopped those things.
Okay.
But yeah, that's to be out and about because work requires it, right?
Yeah. How about the soldiers and the other military people that you're with? How's it going with them?
Yeah. So sailors on this base and families here, the shipments are coming in. Yeah. I think like a lot of what you see in the States, we're still Americans here. And I think some of our gut first reaction is to panic. And so, that first day when it sounded like quarantine instructions were coming, there were long lines, people buying things, clearing stuff out. I guess the nice thing about being in a military community is when people are being stupid while they're shopping out of a panic, the commanding officer can say, knock it off. And he could start putting restrictions on how much can you get, right? I mean, you can't fill your shopping cart with frozen meat. You can't fill your shopping cart with, toilet paper, or whatever. So leave some for those that are behind. It was a first reaction, and it was so unwarranted. There was another Navy base here in Italy that I think hit some of these restrictions before we did, and it was the same reaction. The initial rush to the store, grab as much as you can. Meanwhile, there's managers saying, we got trucks coming tomorrow and the next day and the next day. Why are y'all waiting in line for 2 hours to buy your groceries, right? Yeah. So, but a lot of that's kind of tapered off. So we're getting used to all being homeschoolers now. And today the new instruction is you can't even be outside unless you're going to the store or
really?
Going to the hospital.
You can't go for a walk or something like that?
No, you're not allowed to be outside. So
is that the Italian instruction or the base instruction?
No, that's the Italian instruction. Mm. So the base is, we really want to honor our host nation. Mm-hmm. And we really want to do the things that they want us to do. And So, I mean, it's not just for the sake of playing nice. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
We don't know what we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think anybody does. We're still learning. We're still learning what this is all about. So
yeah. Well, thank you, Lloyd. I really appreciate that. And again, I think it's difficult for people when we look around and nobody around us is sick. None of our friends are sick. We keep in touch with our families. They're not sick. We see all the alarm and, you know, one impulse says, oh, let's panic and panic buy. So we have enough hoarded here. And the other is, oh, this is a huge overreaction. They're tanking the economy. You know, why are they doing this when, you know, there's nothing going on, but it's helpful to see
someone. You won't know what's going on until it's too late, right? Mm. Then it gets out of control. So I don't think it's a reason to panic, but I do think it's a reason to be smart. You got to watch what you're listening. Be careful what you're listening to. There's a lot of unreliable stuff out there too, but I would like to believe that leaders at any government level within the States would be listening and watching to what's happening in other parts of the world and say, you know, what can we learn from this?
Yeah.
And to be accused of overreacting as a leader, I said it on my Facebook thread too, Paul, what a badge of honor for any leader. Call me an overreactor over this, and until my last dying breath, because I'll take that over the accusation of you didn't act soon enough.
Yeah.
You know, and who wants to be responsible for the catastrophic consequences that come with that? I don't think it's an overreaction. I will say that.
Okay.
I think it's cautious, and I think you should be cautious.
Okay.
Because if the trajectory for us is what continues in the States, you're down for some dark days.
Yeah. And we certainly hope that I've said to some people, I'll say, hey, you know, if 2-3 weeks, a month from now, someone looks at me and says, you know, hey, you sounded the alarm and it didn't happen, I will be more than happy to have been proven wrong. I will be overjoyed because as you well know, churches have large numbers of seniors in them. And we know that, you know, from China and Italy, that it's often the seniors that are most vulnerable to this. I don't want to do a bunch of funerals when the travel restrictions are lifted. I don't want to do that.
No. I mean, to be accused of that, actually, you know, they won't probably say it to you, but Paul, it means you did it right. Right. Yeah, well, I mean, you got ahead of it. So
I'm on YouTube, they will say it to me.
Well, between you and me, they're wrong. It's not between you and me. I know. It's the right thing to do. And it's a great opportunity. And I don't know how much who your main audience is, Paul, but what an opportunity for the church to stand up and rise up to this. I'm watching churches figure out how to do things online, you know, and the reach that potentially goes out to, it's just a beautiful thing. I'm watching around here, people taking care of their neighbors, right? When you're quarantined because you're symptomatic or live with somebody who is, you may not go out, not even for groceries, right?
Yeah.
People have to bring you groceries. And I'm watching people do that. And this is not a time to hoard and be selfish. I think this is a time to come together and to look out for the needs of the people around us and care for them.
Yeah.
And the church has to get creative about ministry because there's no package you can order. Or campaign that you can do that's going to touch this, right? I mean, you have to listen to your neighbors, and you have to know your neighbors. You got to care about them and love them.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of neat ways you can do that, living the gospel.
Yeah, I've been getting emails from pastors about equipment because they know that I've done my YouTube thing for a while, and I managed to fit it into my schedule. And you know, as a local pastor in the States, some people, I said to my council last night, we're having weekly council meetings over Zoom. I said to my council last night, I said, you know, some people have more time than they usually have. Some of us are busier than we usually are. So we'll have to spread that around. But it's, you know, to me, I keep reminding Christians that, you know, being a Christian doesn't mean you won't get sick. Being a Christian doesn't mean you won't die. People point to the plagues in the Middle Ages and in the Roman period and how Christians didn't leave. And that's right. but being Christian means that you have confidence that you will be with the Lord come life or come death, that you are in his hand. And, you know, the first question and answer of the Heidelberg Catechism, what is my only comfort in life and in death? That I am not my own, but belong, you know, body and soul to my faithful Savior, Jesus Christ, who has fully paid for all my sins with his precious blood. So, you know, I think this is an opportunity for churches to be able to talk about why we have hope, even if we, like everyone else, will, you know, are subject to the illness and so on and so forth. So I hope that the church does well in these circumstances and is able to be generous and non-anxious with each other, as we're also very realistic with one another about what we're potentially facing. And again, if because the United States did some of these things earlier, our medical systems aren't overwhelmed, hey, praise God for that. That's certainly the goal we're looking for.
Absolutely.
So thank you, Lloyd. I don't know if there's anything else you want to plug, or because you always give a chance to plug things on YouTube, but anything else you want to plug?
You should have given me a warning on that, Paul. I would have been glad to plug lots of things, but thanks for the opportunity. And on behalf of this country that's been my home for the last 2.5 years, as you're navigating your own crisis, keep praying for us too. So okay. We have not turned a corner yet. We're still deep in the rise, and we'll keep on keeping on, and certainly we pray for you all too, and hope, like you said, that good learning comes through the experience, and that your story is very different than ours.
Well, thank you, Lord, and thank you for your service, and maybe I'll check back with you in a week or two, and we'll see. Keep in touch with me as things change, and we can do this again.
I'm quarantined. I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, Lloyd. Well, you take care.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Paul.
Okay, bye-bye.